Chapter 20. Is, thought I, the people in our village call these Republicans wicked and bloody-minded. A lamb could not be more tender than this sentimental bottle-nosed gentleman. The worthy man then gave me to understand that he held a place under government. I was busy in endeavoring to discover what his situation might be when the door of the next apartment opened and Schneider made his appearance. At first he did not notice me, but he advanced to my new acquaintance and gave him, to my astonishment, something very like a blow. "You drunken, talking fool," he said. "You are always after your time. 14 people are cooling their heels yonder, waiting until you have finished your beer and your sentiment." My friend slunk muttering out of the room. "That fellow," said Schneider, turning to me, "is our public executioner. A capital hand too, if he would, but keep decent time. But the brute is always drunk, and blubbering over the sorrows of Werder. Apostrophe, I know, not whether it was his old friendship for my uncle, or my proper merits, which won the heart of this the sternest ruffian of Robespierre's crew, but certain it is, that he became strangely attached to me, and kept me constantly about his person. As for the priesthood and the Greek, they were of course very soon out of the question. The Austrians were on our frontier, every day brought us accounts of battles won. And the youth of Strasbourg, and of all France, indeed, were bursting with military ardor. As for me, I shared the general mania, and speedily mounted a cacade as large as that of my friend, the executioner. The occupations of this worthy were unremitting. Saint Just, who had come down from Paris to preside over our town, executed the laws and the aristocrats with terrible punctuality. And Schneider used to make country excursions in search of offenders with this fellow, as a provost marshal, at his back. In the meantime, having entered my 16th year, and being a proper lad of my age, I had joined a regiment of cavalry, and was scampering now after the Austrians who menaced us, and now threatening the emigres, who were banded at Koblenz. My love for my dear cousin increased as my whiskers grew. And when I was scarcely 17, I thought myself man enough to marry her, and to cut the throat of anyone who should venture to say me nay. I need not tell you that during my absence at Strasbourg, great changes had occurred in our little village, and somewhat of the revolutionary rage had penetrated even to that quiet and distant place. The hideous Eid of the Supreme Being had been celebrated at Paris. The practice of our ancient religion was forbidden. Its professors were most of them in concealment, or in exile, or had expiated on the scaffold their crime of Christianity. In our poor village my uncle's church was closed, and he, himself, an inmate in my brother's house, only owing his safety to his great popularity among his former flock, and the influence of Edward Ansel. The latter had taken in the revolution a somewhat prominent part, that is, he had engaged in many contracts for the army, attended the clubs regularly, corresponded with the authorities of his department, and was loud in his denunciations of the aristocrats in the neighborhood. But owing, perhaps, to the German origin of the peasantry, and their quiet and rustic lives, the revolutionary fury which prevailed in the cities had hardly reached the country people. The occasional visit of a commissary from Paris or Strasbourg served to keep the flame alive, and to remind the rural swains of the existence of a republic in France. Now and then, when I could gain a week's leave of absence, I returned to the village, and was received with tolerable politeness by my uncle, and with a warmer feeling by his daughter. I won't describe to you the progress of our love, or the wrath of my uncle Edward, when he discovered that it still continued. He swore and he stormed. He locked Mary into her chamber, and vowed that he would withdraw the allowance he made me, if ever I ventured near her. His daughter, he said, should never marry a hopeless penniless subaltern, and Mary declared she would not marry without his consent. What had I to do? To despair and to leave her. As for my poor uncle Jacob, he had no counsel to give me, and, indeed, no spirit left. His little church was turned into a stable, his surplice torn off his shoulders, and he was only too lucky in keeping his head on them. A bright thought struck him. Suppose he were to ask the advice of my old friend Schneider regarding this marriage? He has ever been your friend, and may help you now as before. Here the captain paused a little. You may fancy, continued he, that it was droll advice of a reverend gentleman like Uncle Jacob, to counsel me in this manner, and to bid me make friends with such a murderous cutthroat as Schneider. But we thought nothing of it in those days. Guillotining was as common as dancing, and a man was only thought the better patriot the more severe he might be. I departed forthwith to Strasbourg, and requested the vote and interest of the citizen president of the Committee of Public Safety. He heard me with a great deal of attention. I described to him most minutely the circumstance, expatiated upon the charms of my dear Mary, and painted her to him from head to foot. Her golden hair and her bright blushing cheeks, her slim waist and her tripping tiny feet. And furthermore, I added that she possessed a fortune which ought, by rights, to be mine, but for the miserly old father. Curse him for an aristocrat, concluded I, in my wrath. As I had been discoursing about Mary's charms, Schneider listened with much complacency and attention. When I spoke about her fortune, his interest redoubled. And when I called her father an aristocrat, the worthy ex-Jesuit gave a grin of satisfaction, which was really quite terrible. Oh, fool that I was to trust him so far! The very same evening an officer waited upon me with the following note from St. Just. Strasbourg, 5th year of the Republic, 1 and indivisible 11 Ventus. The citizen Pierre Ansel is to leave Strasbourg within 2 hours, and to carry the enclosed dispatches to the president of the Committee of Public Safety at Paris. The necessary leave of absence from his military duties has been provided. Instant punishment will follow the slightest delay on the road. Salute fraternite. There was no choice but obedience, and off I sped on my weary way to the capital. As I was riding out of the Paris gate, I met an equipage which I knew to be that of Schneider. The ruffian smiled at me as I passed, and wished me a bon voyage. Behind his chariot came a curious machine, or cart, a great basket, 3 stout poles, and several planks, all painted red, were lying in this vehicle, on the top of which was seated my friend with the big cockade. It was the portable guillotine which Schneider always carried with him on his travels. The bureau was reading The Sorrows of Werther, and looked as sentimental as usual. I will not speak of my voyage in order to relate to you Schneider's. My story had awakened the wretch's curiosity and avarice, and he was determined that such a prize as I had shown my cousin to be should fall into no hands but his own. No sooner, in fact, had I quitted his room than he procured the order for my absence, and was on the way to Steinbach as I met him. The journey is not a very long one, and on the next day my Uncle Jacob was surprised by receiving a message that the citizen Schneider was in the village, and was coming to greet his old friend. Old Jacob was in an ecstasy, for he longed to see his college acquaintance, and he hoped also that Schneider had come into that part of the country upon the marriage business of your humble servant. Of course Mary was summoned to give her best dinner, and wear her best frock, and her father made ready to receive the new state dignitary. Schneider's carriage speedily rolled into the courtyard, and Schneider's cart followed, as a matter of course. The ex-priest only entered the house, his companion remaining with the horses to dine in private. Here was a most touching meeting between him and Jacob. They talked over their old college pranks and successes. They capped Greek verses, and quoted ancient epigrams upon their tutors, who had been dead since the Seven Years' War. Mary declared it was quite touching to listen to the merry friendly talk of these two old gentlemen. After the conversation had continued for a time in this strain, Schneider drew up all of a sudden, and said quietly that he had come on particular and unpleasant business hinting about troublesome times, spies, evil reports, and so forth. Then he called Uncle Edward aside, and had with him a long and earnest conversation. So Jacob went out and talked with Schneider's friend. They speedily became very intimate, for the ruffian detailed all the circumstances of his interview with me. When he returned into the house, some time after this pleasing colloquy, he found the tone of the society strangely altered. Edward Ansell, pale as a sheet, trembling, and crying for mercy, poor Mary weeping, and Schneider pacing energetically about the apartment, raging about the rights of man, the punishment of traitors, and the one and indivisible republic. Jacob, he said, as my uncle entered the room, I was willing, for the sake of our old friendship, to forget the crimes of your brother. He is a known and dangerous aristocrat. He holds communications with the enemy on the frontier. He is a possessor of great and ill-gotten wealth, of which he has plundered the republic. Do you know, said he, turning to Edward Ansell, where the least of these crimes, or the mere suspicion of them, would lead you? Poor Edward sat trembling in his chair, and answered not a word. He knew full well how quickly, in this dreadful time, punishment followed suspicion, and, though guiltless of all treason with the enemy, perhaps he was aware that, in certain contracts with the government, he had taken to himself a more than patriotic share of profit. Do you know, resumed Schneider, in a voice of thunder, for what purpose I came hither, and by whom I am accompanied? I am the administrator of the justice of the republic. The life of yourself and your family is in my hands. Yonder man, who follows me, is the executor of the law. He has rid the nation of hundreds of wretches like yourself. A single word from me, and your doom is sealed without hope, and your last hour is come. Ho! Oh, Gregor! Shouted he, is all ready? Gregor replied from the court, I can put up the machine in half an hour. Shall I go down to the village, and call the troops and the law people? Do you hear him? Said Schneider. He guillotine is in the courtyard. Your name is on my list, and I have witnesses to prove your crime. Have you a word in your defense? Not a word came. The old gentleman was dumb, but his daughter, who did not give way to his terror, spoke for him. You cannot, sir, said she, although you say it, feel that my father is guilty. You would not have entered our house thus alone, if you had thought it. You threaten him in this manner, because you have something to ask, and to gain from us. What is it, citizen? Tell us how much you value our lives, and what sum we are to pay for our ransom. Sum, said Uncle Jacob. He does not want money of us. My old friend, my college chum, does not come hither to drive bargains with anybody belonging to Jacob Ansell. Oh, no, sir, no, you can't want money of us, shrieked Edward. We are the poorest people of the village. Ruined, Monsieur Schneider, ruined in the cause of the Republic. Silence, father, said my brave Mary, this man wants a price. He comes, with his worthy friend yonder, to frighten us, not to kill us. If we die, he cannot touch a sou of our money, it is confiscated to the state. Tell us, sir, what is the price of our safety? Schneider smiled, and bowed with perfect politeness. Mademoiselle Marie, he said, is perfectly correct in her surmise. I do not want the life of this poor driveling old man. My intentions are much more peaceable, be assured. It rests entirely with this accomplished young lady whose spirit I like, and whose ready wit I admire, whether the business between us shall be a matter of love or death. I humbly offer myself, Citizen Ansell, as a candidate for the hand of your charming daughter. Her goodness, her beauty, and the large fortune which I know you intend to give her, would render her a desirable match for the proudest man in the Republic, and, I am sure, would make me the happiest. This must be a jest, Monsieur Schneider, said Mary, trembling, and turning deadly pale. Colin, you cannot mean this. You do not know me. You never heard of me until today. Pardon me, beldame, replied he. Your cousin Pierre has often talked to me of your virtues. Indeed, it was by his special suggestion that I made the visit. It is false, it is a base and cowardly lie, exclaimed she, for the young lady's courage was up. Pierre never could have forgotten himself and me so as to offer me to one like you. You come here with a lie on your lips, a lie against my father, to swear his life away, against my dear cousin's honor and love. It is useless now to deny it. Father, I love Pierre Ansel. I will marry no other but him, though our last penny were paid to this man as the price of our freedom. Schneider's only reply to this was a call to his friend Gregor. Send down to the village for the mayor and some gendarmes, and tell your people to make ready. Shall I put the machine up? Shouted he of the sentimental turn. You hear him, said Schneider. Marie Ansel, you may decide the fate of your father. I shall return in a few hours, concluded he, and will then beg to know your decision. The advocate of the rights of man then left the apartment, and left the family, as you may imagine, in no very pleasant mood. Old Uncle Jacob, during the few minutes which had elapsed in the enactment of this strange scene, sat staring wildly at Schneider, and holding Mary on his knees. The poor little thing had fled to him for protection, and not to her father, who was kneeling almost senseless at the window, gazing at the executioner and his hideous preparations. The instinct of the poor girl had not failed her. She knew that Jacob was her only protector, if not of her life, heaven bless him, of her honor. Indeed, the old man said, in a stout voice, this must never be, my dearest child, you must not marry this man. If it be the will of Providence that we fall, we shall have at least the thought to console us, that we die innocent. Any man in France at a time like this would be a coward and traitor if he feared to meet the fate of the thousand brave and good who have preceded us. Who speaks of dying? Said Edward. Who, Brother Jacob? You. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.